So this is the Living Legacy Project interview with William West on July 25th, 2012. And William, was there anything you wanted to say?
Yes, initially I'd like to dedicate this interview to my mother, Mary Henry West, who was my first teacher when I was 6 years old. She did a drawing of a man in a suit and told me as a single child I was going to have to entertain myself. And so I spent years drawing from such things as comics and the Times, the Courier, and the News were the papers we had then. And I will carry on with the interview.
William, what made you decide that you wanted to pursue a life in the arts?
You just said the end. Well, I've never really thought about it as a life in the arts for me. Art is something different for everybody. It was a means by which in my youth I entertained myself. We had found a box of rag-made paper, and the sheets were 6 by 9 inches. And like I said, I copied the comics. When I was in high school, we didn't have TV then. So I'd listen to football games, and I'd draw my impressions of the action on the paper. And from the comics that I copied, like I said, were Tarzan, Tailspin, Tommy. There was a couple others, but Prince Valiant was one of them. They were all naturalistic. So I learned unknowingly how to draw the human body, how to draw houses, trees, vegetation, skies. I really knew a lot about drawing that I didn't know I knew. But it was fun. And so when I came home from the service in 46, we had the GI Bill. And so I decided that I wanted to try drawing formally. I went to UB for a year and then transferred over to Albright Night School. This was back in 48, I transferred over to Albright Night School. I went 1 year there, and then I was working at the post office. And so I worked the post office at night, and I found out that the Art Institute of Buffalo had classes in the daytime I could attend. And so I went there full time. I usually arrive about 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock in the morning, until about 1 in the afternoon when I had to go to work. So art just continued to be something I pursued without an ambition to be a commercial artist or to make money at. I just wanted to learn how to paint. And I did that there. I remember there was a Louise Jameson. She taught us how to make gesso panels and canvas panels. And so there we began to paint from there. And then I met Bob Blair and David Pratt and a few others at that time. And I was impressed with Blair's work in the sense that I tell the tale that he would come in from his farm in the any given day, and if he didn't have a pallet, he'd take a garbage can top, toss it on the floor, put his watercolors on the floor, and proceed to do a painting. And so I learned a free spirit. I knew others who went to Albright, which taught a much more formal system. But the Art Institute was sort of freewheeling. And from them I learned composition, and we would maybe have to draw apples from memory or whatnot. And we went out into the field a lot, and we did a lot of figure drawing. And they just added to my passion for drawing then at that time. And I just carried it on. I'd do that, do it at night when on days off. Sometimes the family would be sitting playing cards, and I would draw the family members playing cards. Mm-hmm. So I, at that time, I worked a lot in oils. I appreciated oils, and I began to work oils on paper. I had been down to Zohar Valley one time on my own. That's quite a road down into mm-hmm. Zohar Valley. And went down in there, and it was on a weekend, and I was doing some paintings, and I ran out of but anyhow, I started doing the oil on paper using the medium, the mar, varnish, and so forth, on the paper with the paints, and I liked the results I was getting. And I kept on doing that. I have a painting I did of my grandmother with a house painter's brush, 4-inch stipples. No one will copy that picture because you can't copy the stipples. But that's part of it. And then I kept on going till one teacher told me that was a misuse of the materials. In the meantime, being with Bob Blair, you learned oils and watercolor. And I did a lot of watercolors then. And so later on, I'd say around about 55 is when I think Mr. Birchfield began to teach at the Institute. He liked their approach to art, and he'd known them quite a while, Dave Pratt and Bob Blair. So, maybe a couple years later, I told him about this experience with the teacher who told me it was a misuse of materials. He said, you do what you want to do with what you want to do. And that was important, because I just viewed your show out here, the Artists Amongst Us, and you certainly will see a wide variety of styles and uses of color. Yeah. So I proceeded on with the, I had let the oil on paper go, and I had done a lot of with palette knives and brushes and so forth. And then I had an accident, which from the accident, I couldn't carry the equipment around for oils. So I began to do more watercolors, and then I gradually began to draw with crayon pencil. And I found I could take crayon pencils and a small pad and go wherever I want to and draw. So I used to go out on Griner Road and do landscapes out there. I would go to the library and see what somebody slouched out in the chairs of the library. I would do them. I enjoyed doing whatever I saw in front of me and how I approached it. Mm-hmm. So I had no particular subject that I favored. City or country was all the same. You just respond to it as you as an individual respond to it. My one problem was I wasn't painting for somebody else, I was painting for me. And I got, if somebody liked it, okay. If they didn't like it, I didn't care. It was what I wanted to say at that time, or what I could say. I've learned later to do other things, but one of the things I liked about oils was you could do glazes, so you could have a certain amount of transparency. There is transparency in watercolor, it's true. But I found with acrylics, you can handle it both as heavy material, or you can handle it like a watercolor. Mm-hmm. And you can mix the two. So I enjoy doing, when I say mix the two, you can use the material both ways within the same painting. So I do a lot of things that Maybe others wouldn't do, but I do what I want to do. But that's the way I've always approached it. I never approached it from the standpoint of making a living, because I had a good job. I was a postal clerk, okay. And then I became a supervisor when I retired. But you had in that question that you sent us, why were we here in the Western New York?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm a fourth generation in this community. My great-grandfather escaped slavery, went into Ridgeway, Ontario, back in 1840. I have from the Census Bureau, from the census record in Ridgeway, Ontario, that my father was 1 year old in 1851. No, it would have been my grandfather was 1 year old in 1851, and my great-grandfather was 27. I had two sets of parents. I was born to Loretta Jennings in 1922 in Pittsburgh, and then her sister, Mary West, adopted me within a year later. And so she brought me here to Buffalo in 1926. So I've been drawing since about 1928.
Could you talk about some of your most important influences as an artist?
I'd have to say the comics. I'd also have to say the teachers that I had at the Institute. And I would also have to include a teacher by the name of Joe Fisher, who was at UB when I was there studying under Empire State.
Mm-hmm.
With Blair and Birchfield and Pratt, there were no rules. You did what you wanted, and if you wanted to work in abstract, that was you. If you wanted to work in impressionistic, that was you. You did whatever you felt you could do with the particular medium. I guess I was influenced by Blair, and I do have a couple pieces at home that I did try to do as my impression of the Birchfield style. But I didn't try to incorporate them into my work. They were just people that taught me how to see and how to put my expression on paper.
Mm-hmm.
I had a self-portrait I did. It took me 20 years to finish. I had everything but the color of the collar. And I couldn't figure out the color of the collar. About 20 years later, I was able to fill in the color of the collar, and the picture came together.
What color did you eventually decide on?
Well, it was just sort of a pale gray collar.
Mm-hmm.
It was a plain shirt, but the rest of the picture, it took its place in the picture without jumping out as a white shirt. It just, that's something else. You learn how to harmonize, and you develop your own harmonies. You know, I had, my wife used to say she could tell my work. She knew my color schemes, but I didn't know them. I just painted. Yeah.
What are some different themes that may have emerged in your art?
I did have some themes, as it were. There's about five paintings I did with sewing machines in them.
Mm-hmm.
Both my mothers and my sisters in my original family, and a couple of ladies that I associated with later on, my wife and another friend, all sewed.
Mm-hmm.
And so a sewing machine was always in the presence wherever I lived. So that was sort of a recurring theme. In referring to my mother as my teacher, I never saw her do another drawing, but she sewed. There used to be a picnic we used to go to over in Port Lucie from St. Catharines the second Saturday in August. People would come from Toronto, and people would go from Buffalo in the black community who were either came from the islands or immigrated to Canada. And so my mother always in August made a gingham gown, not a gingham gown, but a gingham dress mm-hmm. and a gingham hat. And I used to, and she used to make my father and my pajamas and things like that. So those were periods when creativity for the woman was in the house. Mm-hmm. Oh, they cooked. Mm-hmm. That was a creative art in itself. But the fact that they did so much sewing was an art, you know. And well, when I first started going to the institute, at the same time they started building the high-rise apartments mm-hmm. in Buffalo, and there were a couple of artists elsewhere that had made drawings of the framework. So I remember I did a drawing. I went home and I did a drawing of the framework for the first high-rise on Jefferson and William Street. And from there, I did other drawings. But then during the 60s, I lived on Gray Street and I walked home to and from the post office. During that time, I would pass areas that were being torn down. So there's one painting I call Urban Renewal. The thing was, I wanted to capture the spirit of the properties being burned down as a cheap way of breaking them down for urban renewal. At the same time, I wanted to get that feeling of the fire and the smoke. And I put the furniture in the front to give a sort of a relationship to human habitation. Mm-hmm. And so that was that. And then I did several other landscapes. I did a one called Court Street. Unfortunately, I didn't turn around and do the building that was behind me at the time I did it, because the building behind me was the old library, and that would have been interesting. But I have another one. I did City Hall, looking from where the old library was down Court Street. I also did one of what's called Bennett Street, as it looked before the housing came in. It was a red painted sort of combination garage with a apartment above. But in the background is the old church at Pine and Broadway. And so in some of the work that I did, I would have in the background things that were of the old Buffalo. I did one of Federal Reserve Building as it was being built. And in the back of it was one of the schools that used to be in the Elmwood, Delaware neighborhood. I don't know what the school was, but I did that. Mm-hmm. I also have one that I did of 22 East Utica. Now, I lived at 19 East Utica, which was across the street. And 22 East Utica now is part of the NFTA turnaround terminal. And so as I was learning to paint, my mother asked me to do this painting, and I did the painting of the house that was there. So that's sort of and it also in the back of this house, I show the old Glenwood apartments. So there's quite a few things that I have of historical sites that are gone, you know, and community. I wound up painting community and drawing community. And sometimes I drew the people in it, not because I was trying to do a grand portrait, but just trying to draw to others what I saw in the person. Mm-hmm. You know, so I did have a painting that I did of my wife back in the 50s, and it wound up in the Wayward Muse presentation over at the Albright. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing with the Wayward Muse was they picked 52 artists from Western New York, and I wound up being one of them over a 125-year period. So this is another strange thing with art for me. It opened up many doors that I never expected to be privileged with. Such as right sitting here now. I never painted for a purpose other than my own enjoyment, yet it has put me in touch with people, such as Mr. Birchfield. Now, I'll tell you another one about the relationship with Mr. Birchfield. I grew up at 19 East Utica. 19 East Utica was sort of the hub of the, between the Science Museum, the Albright Museum, the historical building. Well, on Sunday afternoons, a lot of times, I would walk down to Humboldt Park. Humboldt Parkway at that time was a bridle path. And I used to walk over to the Science Museum, and I'd spend my time going through the Science Museum. Other times, I would go to the Historical Society and go through there. And I remember going through Albright, and I remember in school, they used to take us in buses to these places. And I did remember Birchfield's paintings, but I didn't know who they were. I didn't know who he was, but they did stand out in my mind because of his particular way of handling his colors. You never saw, they were always sort of clean edges. I'm not aware of much fusing of edges in his work. Most of his edges are clean and sharp. And the one that impressed me the most was he had trees that looked like, I think, butterflies. And I'd looked at that quite often, never thinking that someday I want to meet this man. And so I was impressed with the scenery going through the old Humboldt Parkway, and so I knew the what's called the Olmsted Parkways intimately without knowing that I knew them. And I miss them now. I hear they want to go back to that, but they never should have destroyed it. It was beautiful. No. It was nice seeing people riding horses. They used to get their horses from over on Delavan Avenue. There was a state horse cavalry right behind School 17 there at that time.
Could you talk about going out to Robert
to
Blair
house?
And to Charles Birchfield's houses?
Oh, well, Bob Blair lived out on Olean Road by Blanchard Road. He had a house and a shed. He called it a shed, but anyhow, I'll bet you when he passed away, there were thousands of paintings there. Now, I'll tell you interesting about one painting he did. Maybe 10 years before he passed, he showed me a painting. It was a watercolor that he had left outdoors in the winter so that the frost could make a pattern over the painting he did. That's how creative his mind was.
Wow.
It was a beautiful piece of work. And I guess I would also have to incorporate this. Back in the 50s, I was in a community that was not as respected as it is today. And they respected me as a man. All I had to do was draw. And with Mr. Birchfield, it was the same thing. I remember seeing a painting that he did. I saw it in a book in North Carolina. And he drew a group of black brothers before a sitting in front of a community store. But there was not any negative tones in it. It was just fellows sitting around a store talking. Mm-hmm. And that was Mr. Birchfield's approach to me. Now, I also was told that you didn't get in his house unless his wife approved. We also exchanged Christmas cards. I still have some at home now. Yeah. And the same with Bob Blair and Jeanette Blair. I have a lot of their cards. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was it like going over to Mr. Birchfield's house?
I was a nervy fellow. So I asked him to look at some of my work. Uh-huh. And he invited me out, showed me his studio, showed me his easel and everything, then took me in the house. And in a couple of cases, I saw a couple of his masterpieces before the public did. That's the kind of man he was. He was just a regular fellow. Mm-hmm. And that he accepted me. Yeah. But I knew we drove out to Blair's house, maybe on Sunday afternoons, yeah. All of them were regular people.
Mm-hmm.
I only have met Catherine. I didn't meet his youngest daughter, mm-hmm, or his son. But a interesting story I could add to it is that his youngest daughter studied cello, and I studied cello, and we studied from the same man over on Hughes Avenue, but I never knew it until later on I had a conversation with Mr. Birchfield, and he said his daughter had studied cello from a fellow by the name of Joseph Berlin. You know, so I believe in a thing called circles. Mm-hmm. And you may do something today, and somewhere along the line, you may come back to that same circumstance or people in life. And I've had a lot of circles, yeah.
So you mentioned that you went from working in oils to working in watercolor.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about your creative process, you know, when you start to make a piece?
I remember one time my family used to go over to Ontario in the fruit area and pick fruit. Mm-hmm. Well, I had my drawing Amarillo block, I'd say about 19 by 16, and I had my brushes and oils, and so while they picked fruit, I looked at a house and did a painting of the house and the foliage around it. To me, it wasn't about I'm going out to do this or I'm going out. It would be more like I'm going to an area and see what I can do. And it wasn't, it just response to the area and what I could do with it. It's hard for me to pin down a style. My style might be more impressionistic. Mm-hmm. I was not trying to compete with a camera. No way could I. I was not trying to copy somebody else's style. I just put down what I saw and what I felt. There's one you have here of 254 Broadway. Now, that 254 Broadway was a place I passed by every day going to and from work when I lived on Gray Street and worked at the main post office, which is now ECC. I was impressed because when you look back in a sort of a passageway from the street into the back, you would look back and see another part of that property with wooden stairs going up to an apartment. I got the impression that at one time a carriage, they kept horses back there, and maybe a carriage, and that the whoever took care of the horses and the carriage brought them through that space. And so it, you might say, whetted my imagination as to what that could have been. And so one weekend, I took my watercolors and went up there and did that. But it's hard for me to define my own work except it was my reaction to what I saw. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't trying to copy anybody else. I was just doing what I saw and what I tried to capture.
You have lived in Buffalo your entire life.
I've been here since I was 4. So I know Buffalo. Wow. Rather, I did know Buffalo. It's changed quite a bit.
But it's changed.
I did know Buffalo.
I was just going to ask, even though you didn't really pursue a career in the arts, how has the arts community helped you find your path? And you have touched on that, talking about the Arts Institute, talking about Blair and Birchfield.
Other than my relationship with the people at the Birchfield, also I had a relationship with the people who founded the Langston Hughes, Pappas, and a few of them. I really didn't get involved with the art community itself. I didn't strike a lot of their fancy. When I say I didn't, I didn't sell a lot of work. Partially because I guess I was working. And there are other things involved in art sometimes besides art. There's the political side, and I never got involved with the political side. So I would have to say that my relationship with the Institute opened up more doors for me than anything. But since then, I have, through, I sort of knew Ted Piazza quite well. I guess another thing in the historic, going back into the historical part of the painting, I did some things that were landscapes in the Ellicott District. One was the original Bethel Church, which used to be down on in the Clinton Street area, and they're now out on Michigan and Ferry. But I have a painting I did of them, of their entrance to the old church back in the 50s, which they have. I did a study, and my paintings are more like, to me, are more like studies. They're not like finished paintings. I did one of, at the time, the emergency hospital, which used to be on Pine and Hickory, I believe. At the time it was being torn down, my mother was living in the Perry Street Projects, and I used to go down to take care of her. And they were tearing the building down, and I did a drawing of that, which I later converted into a crayon drawing. And the Urban League purchased that from me. But those are samples of things that I did in the community that people would relate to. You know, so I did things that I perhaps don't even realize I did that related to places that the community was in. I was not zeroed in totally by community, but community was around me, and if something struck my fancy, I did it. I fancied myself as a community trying to do community improvement, but and I suppose it would it I would rate it as a thing that improved my understanding of people. It also improved my understanding of economics, because I understood economically the inner cities are not manufacturing territories. And this would be getting into the economics of the nation as a whole. Your inner community, your inner city communities don't make products. They buy products, and often the people who produce the products don't want to see them be given grants, etc. But they don't understand that their profits come from the inner city people who can't produce, buying their product. Now, I was introduced to that concept. I used to work with my post office credit union. And at the time when I was working with them, they sent me to Cornell University for summer workshops. And one of the fellows who came there to teach us at the Cornell workshop, and you figure most of us would have had jobs that were dealing with credit unions. These were credit union workshops. So therefore, money wasn't a problem. Family structures, so et cetera, wasn't a problem. And he came there and opened my eyes to something that I didn't realize others realized. We often criticize people on welfare, etc. At that time, I had a, you're taking me off in the political direction, but I had the concept that the culture of the country destroyed family life. When I came home from the service, the fellows in the that came home from the service built up the cultural security of the country by taking jobs. But the women of that became our wives and had been our mothers had worked in the factories. So this meant, and this is my eyesight, this meant that the manufacturer and the financier saw that we were saving money they didn't want us to save. So he began to make products that we wanted. Well, yes, we bought homes and built our families and so forth, but it also took up the monies that we might have saved ourselves. And also, the idea with the welfare department that a man could not be in the house and the woman receive welfare support. So this broke up families. This meant that the family left, the husband left the family structure in order to see that his wife could have income because he had no job. So then from that, this fellow at the Cornell told us, you know, he says, you would be doing the same thing as they're doing. He said, because when you get done with your income from the welfare, you wouldn't have enough to buy anything else other than what you immediately had to have. You didn't even really have enough to go to work. And you'll see families now and then are shown on television that hardly have enough to go to work. Even working families are out there getting food stamps, which is not right. With ECHO, we did start off trying to build a cooperative. Now, yes, I took off on a tangent because this tangent is what led me to ECHO. The fact that this man explained to us about the welfare families. All right, so then I came back. This was in the 60s when Martin Luther King was marching and everybody was trying to figure out how to build up the community. So I took some fellows from the post office, and we used to go out to the Clinton Street Market and put groceries together, buy groceries, take them back to a center. My wife and some women would gather and put them in the bags, and we'd sell them for $5. They'd have like a 5 pound of potatoes and 5 pound of apples and maybe 3 or 4 pounds of meat in them and greens and canned goods, and sell them on the weekend. People would order them, and we'd set up centers. Then along comes this program, Model Cities. They liked our program, so they wanted to back us up because we, and said they would help us with our program. So then we began to think about the idea of building up a community market, a cooperative. Mm-hmm. Well, I understood cooperatives because I was already working with the post office cooperative. And so the idea there was that you, we'd sell them shares for $5, the people in the community. But they really didn't understand that because it had not been part of their education. Mm-hmm. And I think we had two sites. We originally set up at 333 William Street, and then we went over to, I think it was 975 or something like, at Herman and Genesee, and built a market there. And we sold food at the same price as the other places, but because of, I would call it brainwashing, the people didn't understand that we had the same products as they were, and they thought we were in business for ourselves. They didn't understand the cooperative idea. So it eventually faded out. But that was some of the other, that sort of distracted from my art work too. I guess I come from a family that was always trying to do something. My daughter there was head of the municipal housing for 10 years. At that time too, United Church of Christ, which we had joined, was heavily involved in community development. Mm-hmm. So I had the support of the, United Church of Christ and the Council of Churches in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of heavy support. Again, things that I never would have thought of doing. Mm-hmm. But one thing led to another.
I have one more question for you.
Okay.
My last question is, what advice would you give to emerging artists now, to students who are maybe graduating from college, they're starting their art career?
A lot depends what their goals are. If they want to be a commercial artist, fine. If they want to be a fine artist, fine. It's hard for me to say because I was neither. I remember once I was asked to speak to a group of students about art, and I realized when I went to approach them that I couldn't tell them how to be a commercial artist because that wasn't my interest. Yet, but I will say one thing, one of the main things they have to do is they have to learn to draw. Drawing is the lead to good painting. It's the basics. Now, whether you learn like Da Vinci, or whether you learn loose like you want, comics or whatever, like Marin or any of those, learn to draw in your own style. My ballpoint pen is my best drawing tool. I can get as fine a line and shadow. Also, I need to speak about Joe Fisher.
I'd like you to, please.
Joe Fisher, I met when I went to Empire State College. Joe Fisher gave me an appreciation for color. Oftentimes, students will learn, and these TV teachers will tell you to use multiple different colors. Oh, you can have a palette as wide as this stage. Joe taught me to use 12 colors. And so I may use two reds, two yellows, and a blue, maybe two blues. And then maybe augment that with the white, but I never use black. Because you can develop colors with your blues and reds in the purple range that are as deep as a black. And he also taught me to respect the thing I call triangles. A triangle rather than the color wheel. At each end of the triangle, at each point of the triangle, a red on my right, a blue on my right, a red on my left, and a yellow at the top. And then you do the gradations between them and across them, and you can come up with whatever hues and values you want, tinting them with the whites. And sometimes you can use the siennas and the ochres to moderate them. But I learned that you don't have to have a whole spectrum of colors. You just learn to work until you get your own sense of color. Another wild tale. When I came back from the service, I went out to UB, and I didn't succeed the first year. And the counselor told me I needed to study art, which was apparent from the test they gave. So I went over. He also, unfortunately, told me I wasn't qualified for UB. Well, I'm honorary. And so later on, I found out that Empire State gave you a degree for learned life experience. And I've had learned life experiences. And so I went there, but I majored in art and studied under Joe Fisher. Now, he was teaching photography and color. But he taught me how to study colors. And along with it, I can make a color that you can hardly see when you put it against other colors that I have on the page. So I learned how to affect green by red, and how to affect the blues by the oranges. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things you can do without following the rules.
Will you talk a little bit about your relationship with Joe Orfeo?
Well, Joe and I have been friends for, I'd say, about 20, 30 years. Oftentimes, I'd see him at a show, and Joe would come up and hug me. How you doing, Bill? And I didn't pay much attention till about, a couple of months ago, Joe introduced me to a thing called Skype. And Joe talks to me two or three times a week. And he is a consummate painter. Mm-hmm. He tries to do a painting a day. We don't paint the same way. We don't see life the same way. But Joe is a consummate painter. He's a true friend. He's like those other fellows that I was telling you about in the story. Mm-hmm. Joe is down to earth.
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah. Did you know him when you were at the Art Institute?
No, I did not.
Wow.
I met Joe sort of through the various shows, like we would go to Prochonik's show, mm-hmm. or Catherine Koenig's show, mm-hmm. or Bob Blair's show. And I hadn't paid much attention to his work because he was coming through it. But since I've been talking with him on Skype, I found out that he was at the Institute before the war. Mm-hmm. He was cleaning up around there and into his sense of art. And there again is, do your own thing. Mm-hmm. Joe works in what one would call an abstract medium, mm-hmm. but some of us, I've seen some of his work lately that is brilliant in color. Joe's quite an artist.
He really is.
Yeah, and he has a few artists in his family. Because I think he told me this one fellow that he communicates with over in Holland founded SIPA. Joe's real people.
Thank you for taking part in the Living Legacy Project at the Birchfield Penny Arts Center.